Hey, this is Michelle, and you're listening to Words with Michelle, the podcast, a show where I sit down and have conversations with influencers on a range of topics, anything from natural hair, employment, discrimination, food, relationships, and everything in between. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. If you want to send me an email, hit me up at michelle@wordsmichelle.com. Thanks for tuning into the latest episode of Words with Michelle, the podcast. One of the things that I strive to do with my podcast is to give my guests a platform to speak or discuss a matter that's close to their heart. Almost 10 years ago, I interviewed Marcy Ian for my blog and asked her to speak about her life and work in media. I was excited to speak with Marcy because she's had a huge impact on me due to her work in media, but also being a Black woman in media. Noble notes, Marcy has been a fixture in Canadian media for almost 20 years. She entered the news arena at CHCH Channel 11 and then made the big move to CTV in 97, where she became one of the faces of CTV News. After a few years, she landed a co-hosting spot on Canada AM, which she held for over 10 years. She also held a co-hosting spot on the daytime talk show, The Social. I was honored that she took time out of her busy day to speak to me and discuss what her journey had been like. If you'd like to read that interview, I have included the link in the show notes. Well, things have changed since that last interview. Marcy no longer devotes her life to work in media. She has made the move to politics. But before we get into the show, I'd like you to know that this episode has been sponsored by Eprogram Consulting Services. If you're an entrepreneur or a micro-entrepreneur in need of leveling up your business, Eprogram Consulting can walk you through while teaching you the process of starting or expanding a business with their unique business consulting model. Eprogram specializes in product identification, business plans, financial analysis, operations, and marketing. Ready to start or fine-tune your business? Contact Karen at info@epigramconsulting.com. Now back to the show. As I mentioned in the top of the episode, Marcy has switched careers and is now a member of parliament and is the Minister of Women and Gender Equality and Youth. I couldn't help but start off the show asking Marcy what made her dive into politics. I was curious and I had to know. She shares what happened in 2020 that inspired her to make that leap. In our talk, Marcy speaks about 16 days of activism and this year's theme, Come Together, Act Now, which calls on all Canadians, especially men and boys, to challenge harmful norms and take meaningful action to prevent and address gender-based violence. This is a global campaign that unites people to speak out against violence and drive change. It began on November 25th and runs until December 10th. Marcy spoke about what actions will be taken. I also asked about supports for BIPOC women and their families. Instead of asking my guest to provide a bio, Marcy and I catch up and she shares what has happened since our last conversation. Thanks for being on the show, Marcy. Okay, great. So again, I want to say thank you for this. I feel very honored that I get to sit down with you. We did speak like in 2017, like 7 years ago.
It was such a long time.
Oh, it was a long time. The funny thing is it feels like just like yesterday. Because I still remember the conversation. I completely remember everything about the conversation. So it's so weird that it was, and I look back at 7 years ago. So the thing is, exactly, time flies, right? So the last time we spoke in our first interview, I was very proud to highlight you for your many years in the media. Now we're speaking about you in politics. How did you make that transition?
It wasn't a transition that I ever planned on making. It was something that kind of came about in a weird and wonderful way. I, in 2020, was on The Social at the time, talk show, with my very, very good friends, and was doing well and liking it, and liking that it was different from news and that it was more opinion-based. And so there are people who said to me during that time, we thought we knew you, but we are just getting to know you now on this show because we're hearing so much about your family and your life and your opinions. And so it was a really, really amazing thing. But George Floyd died in 2020, and I started having conversations with myself about how I was serving and if I might be able to do that better. I didn't know where I wanted to be, but it just felt it was a moment for so many of us. And it was a reckoning. And I just thought, is this where I need to be? Is this where I need to serve? I thought I was serving well with my microphone, but I really was just uncertain. And several months later, I got a phone call from the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff. I was driving to work one day, and she said, might you consider running for us? And I said, what do you mean? I mean, this is nothing that I ever thought possible. And she repeated herself. And I said, that's something that I'm going to have to think about. That isn't even anything that's ever been on my radar. And so I took several weeks, didn't get back to her. I just kind of put it out of my mind, but it was still there. And then I was sitting with my daughter some weeks later. I will never forget this. We're at a restaurant and the phone rang and somebody on the other end said, is Ms. Ian there, please? And I said, speaking, and it sounded very official. And then she said, the Prime Minister's on the line. And I thought, oh, okay. So this is where this is going. So the Prime Minister then said hello and had reiterated what Katie had said, Katie Telford had said several weeks prior, and in them, you know, wanting me to consider running for the Liberal Party and running in the riding of Toronto Center downtown. And I was a little bit beside myself. The finance minister, Bill Morneau, had held that seat and then had left. And so it was open and there was a by-election. And I thought, oh boy, I said to him, you know, I'm very, very squeaky, Prime Minister. I've interviewed him. I had interviewed him several times. I said, I'm very, you know, open about things. I'm a little bit feisty and I'm not planning on changing anytime soon. And he said, well, Marcy, that's exactly the kind of voice this country needs. And said, I said, well, I'm going to have to talk to my kids. And so I did. And it was Blaise who said, if not you, Mom, who? And I said, okay, Blaise, here we go then. And I was thrust into a month-long by-election, which I ended up winning. Then it was just months after that that there was a general election. Mm. And I won that too. And then after that election, I was appointed to cabinet.
Well, congratulations. So
I've tried to encapsulate everything in a nutshell.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I could see it though, because when you said something that you said something in the first interview we actually did, and I realized you're pretty much a humanitarian. So you want to, you're for the people. So, I mean, you literally said something you said in our first interview. I heard it again. Like you said, and I haven't even listened to the interview in years. But I remember something you said, and you said it again. So that's pretty genuine. I know you're real. So that was pretty awesome. So we are here for a different reason, and not the media. Like I said before, we're going to be speaking about the 16 days of activism. Mm-hmm. So how do you plan? So just jumping right in. So how do mm-hmm. you plan to challenge the harmful norms and take action to prevent and address gender-based violence? Or just speak about the 16 days of activism, if you want to preface that.
Yeah. Why don't I start with the theme? And this year's theme really resonates because it is come together and act now. Mm-hmm. And come together means everyone. You know, there's a woman dying, you know, inside of 2 days in this country and at the hands of an abuser. And that's way too many. And so come together, act now means all of us. And by and large, women aren't hurting themselves. So that means this is very much a call to action with regards to men and boys. And that's a very, very important part of this. And there are some amazing organizations that are doing that work. So these 16 days are rooted in acknowledging that this is a pervasive problem that hasn't stopped and continues to rise, actually, but that this isn't about preaching to the converted, about just women. It's a call to action for every member of society, and also for people to speak up. The come together part means if you've got a neighbor and you know something's happening, or you've got a friend, or you've got a coworker, it means speaking up. It means not ignoring. It means trying to help in any way. It also means centering the voices and the leadership of survivors. And I'll tell you, Michelle, there are so many amazing organizations that we support. WAGE does through our ministry and through our department. And I find, by and large, when it comes to grassroots organizations that support survivors, many of the leaders, the leadership in those places, are survivors themselves. So they have made sure that they are there to help those whose paths they know very, very well. So 16 Days really is about education. It's about learning. It's about action. It's about activism. And it really is about highlighting the investments that we've made to promote, you know, healing and assistance to people that have been hurt and so badly hurt through this scourge of gender-based violence.
So how will victims be supported? Like, what will you plan to do for the victims?
So it's what we have been doing, and it's what continues to be done, and it's highlighting that. So the first ever National Action Plan Against Gender-Based Violence was launched a couple of years ago. And it was launched in partnership with every province and territory. So it took some negotiating and sitting down with my counterparts across this country to get this deal done. But basically, it's $500 million. And each province and territory puts money towards this. We put money towards this. And then grassroots organizations are the benefactors of this. And the plan is rooted in a couple of principles. But the most important is prevention. In my mind, we want this to happen, right? So it's one thing when it's happening and you're supporting, but how do we prevent it? So each province and territory, 25% of their plan has to be about prevention. We are coming up in the next couple of weeks where we'll get a report. Each province and territory will report to our ministry, our department, and let us know how things are going and let us know where the gaps are. And I will say it's interesting because each province and territory is different. So for instance, in Nunavut, their national action plan money might have gone towards men and boys, where there are, you know, survivors of various kinds of abuses, where reconciliation is at the forefront of things. And then in, you know, Ontario, it could be human trafficking. So each province and territory hones in on and puts money towards organizations that have everything to do with what they deem kind of the important parts of GBV. So there's a lot of work that's being done. This is how we support. This is how we continue to support.
Okay, great. So due to systemic racism, we know that is very prevalent. Are there supports specifically addressing the needs of BIPOC women and their families? And what are they?
Yeah, so this is a great question. And when I talked about the tenets of the National Action Plan to End Gender-Based Violence, one of them specifically talks about racialized, indigenous people of color and how plans need to be rooted, specifically geared towards those populations. And so when I think about, you know, places like Women at the Center. This is a Scarborough-based organization run by a woman named Neka McGregor. She is amazing in that she's a survivor herself. And so she's built programming that is survivor-focused, survivor-led, because NECA said to me, we know what we need. We know what we need. We know how we need to support. And this is a Black woman doing this work. There's a Black Youth Helpline, because we can't forget that younger women are victims of gender-based violence as well. Another mental health organization called Across Boundaries, Black Youth Helpline, I believe, does mental health, a mental health component too. So these are culturally appropriate services. And there are many organizations right across the country doing just that, because you're right. This is not a one-size-fits-all approach. This is very much an approach where people need to feel comfortable when they are, you know, going to therapy, when they are seeing a caseworker. They need to see themselves, and they need to know that there's someone there that's been through and understands their journey.
Yeah, it is very important to use the language, and not just like different language, but just cultural differences, right?
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right.
Okay, perfect. So we may have spoken about this before, but we saw a rise in domestic violence during the pandemic, because I remember hearing that in the news a lot. Have the numbers increased, decreased, stay the same?
So, you know, it was interesting. I think it's important to point to why we saw that increase. And it's a simple thing, but I think it has to be pointed out. We told everybody to stay home. We said, everybody, right? We said, everybody, if you're going to be safe, stay home. And the fact of the matter is, home wasn't safe for a lot of people. So hence the rise. They were stuck at home, many of them with their abusers. And where were they to go, right? Because it was stay home, make sure you do that. That's how you're responsible. You do, you don't, you know, walk the streets. You don't go travel, you know, all of that. You stay home. And so, yes, it skyrocketed. And unfortunately, it has continued to rise. We're not seeing it slow down. And we're also seeing a rise in cases involving seniors, Michelle, which is really interesting. So it really shows how pervasive this is and right across the board. So obviously younger women, middle-aged, women, and now we're seeing cases involving seniors rise. And this has been going on since 2018. So that's interesting there too. Intimate partner violence. Obviously, there isn't a day we don't see something in the headlines about somebody who has fallen victim to that. And so these numbers are going in the wrong direction. And that's why we have literally put forward historic amounts of money towards this, and also partnered with provinces and territories, because I completely understand, and it's important to note, that there isn't one government that's going to get this done. This has to be, and frankly, it's not just about government. It's about the private sector. It's about communities. This is an all hands on deck situation.
I just want to ask, so I know that there's help and support. Like, will we be going to schools? Like, how will we get to younger kids? Because I feel like maybe high school age, perhaps, really benefit from hearing this, because things could start then. It could probably start before then, but when you're a teenager, you're dating, you never.
Oh, right? Absolutely. So we had a campaign, it's a great question, called It's Not Just. And this was a focus on gender-based violence. So I went to universities. There were some high schools as well in there as well. And the whole campaign was to focus on what it is, right? So it isn't just physical abuse. There's a mental component, there's a psychological component. Sometimes it happens on social media. And so this is what we talked about. And there was a whole campaign that we did, and it was actually quite well received. We had great discussions with a lot of young people. The other part of this is that there is an organization called White Ribbon and another called Next Gen Men. And they focus on boys and young men. That's what they do. So this is high school. This is beyond high school, but they zero in, and actually a little younger with Next Gen Men. I think it's grade 8 that they start, where they talk about masculinity. What does that mean? What does that look like? It is okay to cry. It is okay to show your emotions. They talk about parameters and boundaries and all of these things. And they do that at a young age, which is excellent. And this is the come together part that I'm talking about. So there's a lot of work being done, because there is that realization that if we're going to prevent this from happening, we've got to start younger.
Yes, definitely. I mean, because I have a nephew who's 13, and
That grade eight age.
yeah,
My
exactly.
son
So he, to
is
me,
the
he's pretty much
same age.
aware of it. So it's good to start really young so they know how to treat each other. So I
That's
like,
right.
yeah.
That's right. Know how to treat each other and know how to just respect boundaries. My son is the same age. Dash is 13. And I can see, this is where relationships form and, friendships and all of these different things. And then there's puberty, all these things happening at once. And it's great because some of these organizations, I know Next Gen, they have circles. They have like group circles where, boys just get together and they can share. And, nothing's off base, nothing's off topic. They can just share how they're feeling, what's going on, and just have a place where they are accepted.
I think that's good for this generation or the younger or the youngest generation because they seem to be a little more open to things like that. Because you can tell just with the language and with the gender-free clothing. So they seem a little more open-minded, easier to speak to. Because you were saying there's now like an increase with elderly like abuse or older people. So I'm thinking there's a huge shift, right? There's like an untapped market type of thing, or just like younger people seem to be open enough to learn. Older people need a little more help because they've lived that way for so long. They think that's not acceptable.
Yeah, absolutely right. And there are cultural components. There are all sorts
That's
of
true.
components. There are all sorts of components to this, but this is something that has to stop. And it's important to call it out, right? Family, it's not acceptable for family violence to be on the rise in this country. And it is. And it's the most susceptible, it's the most vulnerable of us that are victimized by it. I mean, when you see seniors and those numbers rising, those are the most vulnerable. It's seniors and kids, right? Young people. That are the most vulnerable in our society and that, are now being victimized this the same way. It speaks to maybe the pressures that we face. Again, there are cultural components. It speaks to a lot of things. We have to continue, and really, I cannot stress the working together part. I wish, Michelle, there was a quick fix. I wish I could wave a wand and this would be gone. But the longer I have the honor of, the longer I've held this ministry and led in this space, I see that there's just so much we have to do. It feels like we're at the tip of the iceberg. And I see that we've made some change, but man, I mean, there's so much to do.
As we approached the end of the show, I thanked Marcy for being on the show and I asked her if she wanted to share a few closing remarks.
Well, I would just say that, the stark reminder when it comes to Canadian history, gender-based violence is L'École Polytechnique. And that anniversary is coming up on the 6th.
That's
And I will be traveling to Montreal for that, for what is a really somber ceremony. There are no speeches, there's no one really talking as far as, governments and leadership of that ilk, but I will be going there for that. And it's just a sober reminder of what can happen. So many years ago in a classroom, in a university, men and women were divided. The men were told to go this way, the women went this way, and then they were shot. It's unconscionable. But this is why we do the work that we do. This is why we do what we do.
Okay, thank you so much. It's been an honor speaking to you again. Thank you so much for sharing your work with us and telling us what you're doing and the strides you want to do, like the change you want to make. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much, Michelle. And thanks for really for reaching out and being persistent about it. I appreciate that. It's really good to be with you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks again for listening to the latest episode of Words with Michelle, the podcast. Just a reminder, you can subscribe to the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You can also listen to the show on my blog at wordswithmichelle.com. If you have any questions, or if you'd like to provide a comment or feedback, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show, you can email me at michelle@wordswithmichelle.com. You can also email me if you're interested in sponsoring an episode. Thanks again for listening to the show, and until next time, bye.